Welcome to the Alt Accountant Show. My name is Kirk Bowman from Art of Value. I'm joined by my co-host Hector Garcia from Quick Bookkeeping. By the way, if you're looking for the Art of Advisory Show, this is it. We've just rebranded and we talked about that last week. But this week, Hector, what's going on in your world?
Just another week, another week in busy January for the accountant world. But other than doing a whole bunch of 1099s and W-2s for my customers, everything's the same.
So last week we talked about goals that you could set for your business. And kind of after we stopped recording, we dove into this next one a little bit further and decided to make it the topic for this week, which is maybe you're going to decide to either start marketing your business because you never have, you've just relied on what's kind of come in organically, or two, you're going to improve your marketing. One of the things that prompted this topic was an email that I sent out late last year to my email list. And so, by the way, just a little bit of a plug. If you want to get on my email list, one of my goals for this year is to email daily, and that's business days. I'm not going to do it 7 days a week. I'm going to try to do it 5 days a week. But send something that is truly valuable for people to read and look at. Sometimes it'll just be my opinion on something. And this time I had kind of taken some screenshots of some LinkedIn profiles of some people that I thought had really good positioning. So I'm going to start off by just sharing a couple of these and that'll kind of open up our discussion. So the first one was from an accountant who specializes in dentists. His name is Wes Hackett. And if you read the line right under his name, so think about a LinkedIn profile. It has your picture in a circle, then it has your name, and then right under that is a sentence or two about who you are, what you do. And my suggestion is, I think that sentence should be your positioning statement. And I love Wes's positioning statement. He says, "I help dentists increase their profitability without worrying about bookkeeping or QuickBooks." Straight and to the point. Another one. This is from Angela Melhart, and looks like she, oh, here it is. She says, helping business owners get impossible custom reports out of QuickBooks at a single click. And the phrase "in a single click" reminded me of Superman. So she is aligning herself as a hero for people who can't get the data out of their accounting that they need in order to make decisions. Angela's the one to call. So those are just a couple of examples. What are your thoughts on this idea of positioning, particularly around the idea that it's probably one of the important things to consider as a goal for 2019?
Sure. And we talked about goals extensively in the last week's episode. We're focused around, hey, what are your goals? How do you set goals? What are the common goals that accountants and bookkeepers kind of set? Let's break down a couple of these. So Wes Hackett's was what again? Can you repeat it? Let me break it down for you for a second.
Let's see. Wes's again was, "I help dentists increase their profitability without worrying about their bookkeeping or QuickBooks."
Okay. So I just want to break down what's good and, let's say, potentially bad about these positioning statements. So what most people think that's potentially wrong with positioning statements, or what could negatively impact them, you should call Wes and ask him. He's very successful. And he happens to be a friend of ours as well, at least mine. Kirk, I don't know if you know him, but he happens to be a friend of mine.
You'd have to ask him.
Yeah. He happens to be a friend of mine in the community as well. We didn't ask permission to talk about them. This is public information in the LinkedIn profiles. But what most people fear around narrowing it down, like dentists, and by the way, even dentists, it may not be narrow enough, to have a real aggressive positioning strategy. But what he has said, look, if you're not a dentist, you probably shouldn't look at my profile. And that takes a lot of courage. It's the courage to be okay with not having the opportunity to see all the non-dentist clients. Now, does that mean he doesn't take non-dentist clients? Probably not. He will probably take a referral. You know, a dentist has a friend who's an internal doctor. He would probably take that as well. It's probably closely related, or maybe has a friend that creates veneers or whatever. Maybe he'll take that as well. But when he markets himself, he simplifies the message. So if you're not a dentist, you know, stop looking at this, right? Now, what does that do? That does alienate 99% of the possible businesses, but that 1%, it makes him stand out above all the other ones that maybe they're comparing him against. So that's his first step. He took the courage, he took the first step to alienate 99% of the potential business and narrow it down to just that 1% that's dentist. The second thing that he did is he made a statement about what Dan Sullivan calls the desired future state, which is, what was it, growth or profitability, Kirk? What was the
exact profitability.
Thing? Right. So he says he's making a desired future state. So he's saying, hey, dentist, okay, so only the dentists are looking at it. Are you looking to be more profitable? And by the way, that's kind of one of those, what do they call it, rhetorical statements. Everybody wants to be more profitable. But I think, again, not everybody, because there are dentists that are on the way out. There are dentists that are looking, you know, to sell their business or exit it. And there may be accountants that focus on, you know, dentists that are selling their practice. I mean, so again, so if you're saying I'm focused on dentists that are growing or looking to be more profitable, they're probably going to be younger dentists, right? The ones that are in the first 10 years where they haven't hit that plateau where they're just a flat, because I don't know a lot about dentists, but I have enough dentist clients where I can tell you that the first 7 years, it's a roller coaster. And then once you hit 7 years, it's pretty much a flat line, right? Not to make any medical jokes here. They don't grow. They don't get bigger. They don't get smaller. They're pretty much busy all the time. And that's it. So he's probably not looking for those dentists that are very comfortable with staying how they are. So he's making the desired future state statement to say, hey, dentist, only dentist, if you're looking for profitability, which is probably those that are growing, or the few that are on the plateau that are looking to expand, I can help you. Oh, by the way, if you have worried about accounting before and you have had anxiety around, you know, giving receipts to your accountant or giving them a spreadsheet of expenses or even fiddling with QuickBooks before, you don't have to do that. So he's touching three points. One, he's saying who wants to be the person to look at this message. Two, from within that group, which ones are the ones based on where they want to go, where they want to be, that should be calling them. And three, based on how they felt before, you know, that they should call them. So when you look at all three of those components together, you look at a very good positioning statement. So if he had said helping dentists be more profitable, I would say maybe that's not as narrow, or helping dentists have clean books or clean accounting is not narrow. I think that he used three specific points to get him there. So I really like that. So I wanted to kind of break that down. What was the second one so I can dissect that one as well?
So I'll bring that one up, but I just want to hit on a couple things. First of all, one of your last comments was helping dentists keep clean books. By the way, I think the primary reason Wes didn't use that, and I don't know, I haven't talked to Wes, but this is just my guess, is that he realized that clean books mean nothing to dentists. What means something to dentists is the outcomes or results that clean books help them achieve. But clean books is not a goal they have. They have a goal that's something further up the line. Clean books just happen to be something that helps get them there. So that would be, I guess, my one comment that I would add. All right. The second one was from Angela, and I'm probably not pronouncing her last name correctly. It's M-E-H-A-R-G. But her positioning statement was helping business owners get impossible custom reports out of QuickBooks at a single click.
Okay. And I may be biased on this too, because I also know Angela and she's a friend of mine. So
help me pronounce the last name.
I mispronounce it, so I'm not going to dare to
say. So you're not a friend of hers if you don't know how to pronounce her name.
That's okay. We send clients to each other, so we're friends.
All right. Friends. I'll gift you that one.
Yes, we are. We see each other in every conference. And again, it's a coincidence that you pick two people that I happen to know really well, but I guess our circle is getting closer and closer. So Angela, she builds custom reports using tools outside of QuickBooks. I don't want to get very techie, but she will use SQL, Crystal Reports, a tool called QCube, ODBC, and that's it. I'll stop the nerdiness there. But she'll take she'll take her technical knowledge, which is all back end database stuff, and figure out with, and she has to dig really deep into the client's needs, how to get this notion of double clicking on an icon in your desktop and this producing the report with the KPIs, with the net summary numbers, where the end user doesn't have to dig deep or change variables or move knobs around in order to get the report going. Even within QuickBooks itself, and in her positioning statement, she says from QuickBooks, QuickBooks has some tools for custom reports. And even if you can pull the report from QuickBooks, you still have to press about 6 different clicks. Now, 6 clicks is not really a big hardship. Right? Most people can click 6 things. The hardship is remembering which are the 6 things you have to click.
And 6 is a lot.
Yeah, I know. But I'm saying when you compare paying $3,000 or $4,000 for a 1-click report, which is how much she charges, by the way, and I think many ways it's a bargain, by the way. But when you compare, you know, I'm trying to sell to my customer, hey, pay $3,000, $4,000 for this instead of hitting the 6 clicks. The customer say, look, I can do the 6 clicks. But the real challenge is that even from there, there's other data that needs to be calculated or summarized that requires that 6 clicks times 3, because you have to run it in 3 different reports, and then compare the data across the different reports. So what she's done is taking all this technical mumbo jumbo and turn it into a 1-page summary KPI or summary report, so the business owner can look at the stuff that really matters to them, right? Trends in terms of what inventory it's moving, trends to know which inventory is not moving at all, so it's in the borderline to be obsolete. Jobs that are way over budget that have to be looked at before it becomes a complete massacre in your profitability, that sort of thing. So what she has done is build a niche around building custom reports, and her market is very, very narrow, because people don't search custom reports, you know, via SQL, ODBC through QuickBooks and Google. People don't search that. She actually requires other accountants and bookkeepers to be on the lookout for that type of solution. So she networks a lot within the professional community to say, hey, by the way, if you have clients that get frustrated trying to pull this report, that report, refer them over to me. That's why she uses terminology that is not just for the business owner, but that's also for other accounting professionals, where they can say, okay, yeah, I can see how a single click report would be valuable to my customers, but a lot of end users don't see single click report as a thing. So she's used a terminology that somehow allows both accounting professionals and small business owners to understand what she does. So she also said from QuickBooks, which is, we're also making the assumption that she doesn't do custom reports from other systems, which is not true. She does do custom reports from other systems, but she's focusing on the QuickBooks market. So she's playing on 3 anxieties. One is impossible reports. When she says impossible reports, she's saying you've tried getting it done somewhere else, and people have told you it's impossible, right? Because small business owners never think something's impossible until 2 or 3 practitioners tell them it's impossible. So she's also banking on the fact that nobody else can do it, right? So that was the first component. And before I tell you the second component, Kirk, maybe you want to chime in.
Well, I was just going to add, I think your point about the fact that her primary target customer, who is she's positioning for or to, are other accountants. And so it's interesting. And I didn't even think of this when I put this email together, but you're right. The first example was an accountant or bookkeeper targeting, you know, a certain industry or certain profession. The second one is literally an accountant targeting other accountants. The word impossible, that reminds me of a friend of mine who I interviewed on my show a while back. It was one of the first, I think it was like episode number 7 I did on the Art of Value, but it's a guy named Curtis McHale. And Curtis is a specialist with e-commerce, but not just e-commerce, e-commerce for WordPress. And not just e-commerce for WordPress, but e-commerce for WordPress for membership sites. That's really his forte. And not only that, he markets himself as the guy to go to when nobody else can get it done. And that's really kind of, you know, what Angela's doing here. She's saying, hey, I'm the gal to call when nobody else can get it done.
Yeah. And a piece of critique that I will add to Angela directly and hope that she's watching and listening is I would even get their positioning even more honed down. I would change it to changing, helping accountants get impossible reports for their small business clients in a single click. I would even ask her or suggest to her to do it that way. She's kind of, I think she's trying to leverage both sides because most of the paying customers are this. The interesting thing is the ones that pay are the small business owners, but the ones that tell the customer, hey, go with her, are the accounting professionals that know her from the community. So it's kind of an interesting place that she's in. Like she wants to make sure that other accounting professionals know who she is and what she can do, but the business owner ultimately writes the check to her. So she's in an interesting position, but I would suggest to her, if she's watching or someone in the similar field, is if you want to get more business from your accountants, word it that way. Because if you do it, then accountants don't get anxious that you may possibly be after their clients directly. You know, you're there to serve the accountant who's serving the small business owner. So that's kind of both a critique and a breakdown of her positioning statement.
So let's look at a third one here. This was from Brent Geisler, who was somebody in my network and actually is in Dallas. And when I read this, I was literally shocked. I had no clue that this could even be a market. Under his name on LinkedIn, it says, I help tennis directors stop spending hours working on payroll. Now, what is a tennis director? A tennis director, and I had to look this up. That alone just prompted me to go, you know, dig more into what he does. His customers are places where they have a team of tennis pros. So the first thing that jumps to my mind is country clubs, right? But where they have a bunch of freelance instructors that come in and do the private lessons with the clientele. And these are the directors who typically the directors are full-time and they're trying to handle the payroll for full-time, part-time, some W-2, some 1099. That's who he's targeting. I was like, wait, that's even a market? And I had no clue. So that one just caught me because I'm like, wow, I just learned something just by reading his statement.
You know, okay, so helping tennis directors spend less time on payroll. Okay, so his it doesn't sound as focused because it's not as wordy, but it definitely is because, of course, what we said just now, tennis director is probably a very small niche. I mean, how many tennis directors are out there? Now, I searched tennis director in LinkedIn, and there's a lot of people in my network that are tennis directors. So I find
are
that
you
kind
serious?
Of, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
I'm not into tennis, so I just don't have a clue.
Yeah, I got a first connection that's a tennis director in a local club in the city that I live in. So I'm gonna reach out to him. I have a newfound respect for tennis directors, and I guess you know managing payroll. I mean, he must have figured out that managing payroll is complicated for tennis directors. Maybe some of these tennis instructors are subcontractors and they're not turning in timesheets, or maybe they have timesheet drama because they're waiting, you know, they're pretty much working outside and there's no like clock in, clock out. Maybe they're on salary, but maybe they have overtime issues. Maybe they work one-on-one with certain people in the club training them and they have to be billed out. You know, the members have to be billed out for that private training. I really don't know what the complications are around tennis directors, but if you're a tennis director and you're looking for an accountant or a professional of some sort that knows your pain, there's probably very few in the whole world that know it, and they're going to find this guy really quick. I'm sure he's not cheap. I'm sure it was a he or she. What was his name? What was their name?
Brent.
Oh, Brent. Okay.
Geisler.
Yeah. So I'm sure Brent is not cheap. I'm sure he charges accordingly to the amount of specialists in this market that they are. So, which brings me to a really important point. The less specialists that look like you, the less you're comparable, and the more you control your pricing, which means the less you're susceptible to commoditization. to, oh, the other guy would do it for this much. There isn't another guy to do it because nobody else does this, right? Especially in a specific local market. I'm sure there's tennis director payroll consultants in the US, there's maybe three, but within a specific region, there's probably just one. So I think having the ability to say, look, you know, not that I'm pricing for the sake of pricing, but there's no one else that can do this. You know, the price is the price because, you know, this type of work nobody else can do. And I do really well. And, you know, and the value you get out of it is XYZ, whatever it happens to be. But I believe that you have a lot more control over your pricing in the marketplace, or at least the perceived value, if you are one of the very few that do that, whatever that is.
Well, and I think you're exactly right. There is kind of an inverse relationship between how many people do it and the price you can charge. So in other words, the lower the number of specialists, the higher the price that those specialists are paid. So Hector, I know you've been working on your positioning statement. Where are you at right now? Let's throw yours out, and you're going to sit in the guest chair, and I'm going to give you a little feedback on it. So where are you at right now?
Oh, wow. That's a tough one. So I believe, as many of my colleagues do, I believe I'm multifaceted and multi-skilled. So for me, it's particularly difficult to hone down on my positioning statement. And for many years, I refused to call myself a specialist because of the type of content I was creating in YouTube. Like maybe 6 years ago, making QuickBooks content, maybe a specialist, but not anymore, which is good. That means that it caught on and other people are creating QuickBooks content. So for me to become even a bigger specialist, I had to create more unique content. I have experimented. So I didn't necessarily pick my niche. I arrived at my niche by figuring out what I loved and figuring out what the market loved about what I do. And that's kind of the beauty of creating videos and creating content. So I started creating videos 5 years ago of all sorts of QuickBooks topics. The ones that ended up resonating the most were inventory. So 3 years ago, I decided, you know what, I'm going to do more inventory stuff than anything else. So I made it a point to be the biggest YouTube channel with inventory-related content for QuickBooks Enterprise. I was very specific. And even within that, I found out that the clients that were willing to pay the most, the ones that really were waving the check at me saying, you pick the date, you pick the time, I'm ready to go with you, were manufacturing companies. Because there were less and less consultants that wanted to deal with manufacturers, because manufacturers are a lot of work. They're a lot of work. There's a lot of moving parts, no pun intended, right? But there's a lot of physical moving parts. There's a lot of materials. There's a lot of things on the bill of materials. Just manufacturing requires a lot of attention to a lot of detail. And most accounting professionals, although they're detail oriented, they're also sort of high volume. So it's very difficult to go all in, heart and soul and physical body, because I physically go like under shelves and clean shelves out with my customers, because I want to understand the warehouse and the inventory in such a deep way. Most accountants are just not willing to do that. And I love doing that. I happen to have come from a background of inventory when I worked for Best Buy a decade and some years ago. 15 years ago, I forgot exactly how long ago was it when I left Best Buy. But that aligned, you know, my background and my passion aligned with that, and it ended up being manufacturer. So because I had so much demand for manufacturing and I saw a lot of demand for it, I decided to make my positioning statement, helping American manufacturers take more vacations. Now, I want to break that down even a bit deeper. So when I say helping many American manufacturing business owners take more vacations, I'm actually saying I want to help owners of small manufacturers in the US get their inventory right, so they can get their so they can price their product right at a profitable range, or they understand how to market their product better so they can be more profitable. We can delegate all the work to other employees so they can let go of some of the day-to-day stuff. And then once they're profitable, once they delegated stuff and their QuickBooks is running like a well-tuned machine, at that point, they can take more vacation. So that's mine. It's helping American manufacturing business owners take more vacations. Now, now that I did that, I'm getting way too many leads again, even within the manufacturing world. So I'm also trying to now hone down and pick which manufacturers I want to work with. Now, the manufacturers that I have been most successful with have been in the Midwest. So anywhere between, like, I would say, Illinois, Indianapolis, Philadelphia, West Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina. Well, actually, that's more of the East Coast, but anything like around the Midwest and a little bit more towards the Virginia area, most manufacturing companies around that area, they've called me quite a bit. I've been very successful. So I'm bringing it one step further and doing it there. So that's what it is, helping Midwest American manufacturers take more vacations. So critique, so, my friend.
Well, hang on a second, because you kind of stole my critique. So I'm going to ask you, peek behind the curtain here. We have an off-screen chat that Hector and I can use to communicate back and forth while we're recording. And I'd actually suggested that you change American to Midwest. Had you read that, or did you just come up with that on your own?
A combination of both, actually. A combination of both. So what they call the
Rust Belt. So I get partial credit.
Yeah. So what they call the Rust Belt.
Yes, the Rust Belt. That's exactly what I was thinking of.
Right. What they call the Rust Belt is where my top five clients from last year came. It was Philadelphia, Ohio, West Virginia. I don't know if West Virginia falls into that, but my best clients that I've done the best work that
has whole country, it probably does.
Yeah, truly transformative have been manufacturers in the Rust Belt. So that's somewhere Midwest, you know, a little bit of the Mid-South, Mid-Atlantic type of area. That's where most of the best customers have come from.
A lot of times when we talk about specialization, narrowing down, you know, niching down, focusing, positioning, etc., people get worried, well, am I going to go too narrow? Are there going to be enough customers? And there are ways to figure that out, and we don't have time to get into that. But essentially, I just want to point out what Hector said. He started focusing on American manufacturers, and he's now getting too many leads, so he now sees an opportunity to niche down to a geographic area, which is one way to niche down. He could niche down into light industrial manufacturing versus heavy industrial manufacturing, or maybe electronic component manufacturer, whatever, right? You could find different ways to narrow down. So don't be scared of that. That's a natural reaction, but it's not correct. It's a myth. It's a falsehood.
I'll add one more thing, if you don't mind, just to kind of close full circle on that. So I wanted to be a global business because of my YouTube presence. So I started by saying, I'm going to help every manufacturer in the world. But I was trying to do a cross section between my skill set and my values. And one of my values is I want to help people take more vacations. And I ended up in the last couple of years noticing that the way people view vacations worldwide is not the same thing as in America. For some reason, American business owners stigmatize vacations as a negative to productivity, whereas everybody else in the world kind of have this sort of, like, culturally, they have this forced vacations. So I noticed that, you know, my lifestyle and the way I work, I'm very productive based. I'm a hard worker. I'm a workaholic. I tend to resound more with American business owners just because I feel their pain. I understand, you know, how painful it is to leave your business. I understand how painful it is to, to delegate and how much it could potentially cost you to leave your business for a week or two. So what I want to say is that you don't have to pick one now and it has to be there forever. You can start broad and start narrowing down little by little by little until you get to where you want to be. Like, you don't feel that full commitment that your niche has to be something you come up with in one shot and that's it. It could be a moving target, and it's something that you can narrow as you go. That's the only thing I wanted to add in terms of that process.
Well, and I would agree. I think very few people, even the experts, make essentially declare a theory about who they're going to target, what their positioning statement is, and it goes unscathed. Most of them get revised because of refinement through actual live fire on the business field, so to speak.
And I'll add one more plug to Alt Accountant. If you have already enrolled in the program, this unique positioning statement will be probably one of the most prevalent things that we're going to get to extract out of you. If you haven't joined yet, check it out, altaccountant.com, and click on the workshop button. We're going to have a 6-week program that's going to take you through a whole bunch of exercises. One of them is going to be positioning. And at the heart of positioning will be your unique positioning statement, which is the one that I have and the one that some of these accountants have that we have read from. So, Kirk, goodbye, buddy. All right. See you next week.